Welcome back to the Six at Culture podcast. Today I'm joined by Danny. What's going on?
What's up, Benz?
I'm doing as well as the rest of the top six. I think we're all on the same boat right now after this past weekend. Obviously, we had Juventus Villarreal, which was a highly anticipated game for Juventus fans and even some other Serie A fans that hope that Juve lose. You know, there's always that crowd on Twitter that look forward to that. And yeah, it was actually a pretty entertaining weekend. Full of upsets. We saw upsets across the board. Like, everything that could have taken advantage didn't take advantage. And we kept saying, oh, this team lost, maybe this team could take advantage, and they tie. And then, oh, this team lost or tied, this team could take advantage, and then they tied. It was kind of funny like that. Everyone kept, I don't want to say choking, but more or less choking an opportunity to make some ground. But yeah, that's why I said, yeah, this year's been very competitive. And to be honest, none of those draws are too shocking. I think the one I thought for sure, I thought Napoli would win. Cagliari is tough though when they are home, so it's not always an easy game. Torino, Juve, sometimes Torino lay down for them, sometimes they actually put up a fight, and we'll get into that one. We'll start off with Juve, Torino. That was a match on Friday, Derby della Mole. It was a good game. I thought Juve, to be honest, since Allegri came back, their football has not been eye-opening or entertaining or beautiful by any means. You know, it's the classic Allegri ball. You know, he plays for the win no matter how he can get it, which is usually sitting back. Torino, they've been a funny team this year. You know, they've been fighting, they've been trying to scrap for results, but ultimately they're not that good, quite frankly. I think Juric helped them a lot, though, compared to last year. They were atrocious, Torino. Like, they were absolutely, I don't want to say it, but garbage. But, yeah, what can you do? They open scoring. It was a nice header. And later on in the match, Belotti with a beautiful volley. He scored. And I think after the match, they asked him about, oh, was this your last Derby della Mole? And about leaving the team. And he said, if it was my last Derby della Mole, then I'm happy with the performance we put up, which I think it's a fair statement. To tie Juventus is always good for a team like Torino who have been struggling. And I think, to be honest, the men we're all talking about after not only this match, but the whole Vermeer, this guy's been incredible this whole year. I see a lot of teams are monitoring him. He's just such a quick and intelligent and aggressive center back. And I think he'll make a big jump in the summer, personally. Maybe a team like Inter or like Napoli. I think you guys are fine, but if you paired him with Koulibaly, that could be a scary partnership.
Yeah.
Even Milan with Tomori, that could be a good partnership. To me, he was maybe not the man of the match, but up there definitely. I think he's been incredible for Torino, and yeah, he's definitely going to be on the move. And that's all I really have to say about this match. Juventus, disappointing. Franchella saying last podcast how he still thinks they'll win the league. Well, you know, if all those teams dropping points, this could have been a huge win if they did get it. And they failed to do so. I don't think Juve's going to win the league this year. Like, I don't think that's a hot take. I think Dan, you agree, and everyone else that watches said, yeah, I agree. It's only Francesco seems to be confident in Juve right now. Even Juventus fans will say they're not going to win the league. And that, like I said, it's not a hot take. But top four, I think they'll definitely get. Good result for Torino. Poor result for Juventus. It's not the end of the world, but at the same time, it's a game you want to win. You always want to win the derby. And the quality they have compared to Torino, it's a disappointing result. So, Dan, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, no, you made some very good points. It's a very good point for Torino, actually. I know they've been struggling, and they haven't been playing their best, but it was a good point. Belotti getting the goal, so it's always nice to see Belotti getting back on the score sheet after recent events with contract negotiations with the owner, him potentially leaving at the end of the season, him being hurt, all this bullshit, and he found a way to get the goal, a huge goal for Torino, especially in the derby. It's a disappointing result for Juve. Obviously, they need, if they want to get back into the Scudetto race, as French I would say, this was a game that they needed to win, especially because of the results that have happened over the past weekend. It was a poor point. For me, they weren't that impressive. I thought Torino maybe even could have got a few, like maybe one more surprise win. But Brignier, center back, he's incredible. This guy's playing lights out, and I don't think he'll be at Torino next year. I think he'll be on a team like Inter, maybe Milan. I wouldn't be surprised if Napoli do make a pitch for him. I know they like when setbacks play well, they always tend to go for these setbacks in Serie A. So who knows with that, but it was a good point for Torino and 2 points dropped, in my opinion, for Juventus.
Yeah. No, well said then. Juve, among other teams in the top six, like I said before, they've just been struggling this week. And then, you know, Serie A is competitive this year. I think every win can't be taken for granted. Every win's a big win. And like we saw, like, for example, Milan and Saritana, which we'll get into later. Another one where you say, oh, Milan's definitely going to win, and they didn't. So, yeah, don't take anything for granted this year. That's, I think, a lesson we all learned. But moving on, Roma-Verona. To be honest, I don't think anyone thought Roma would win or Verona would win. I think it's like kind of like a toss-up this match. Verona is a very difficult team at times. And the Roma, you can't, you know, if you're a gambling man, never bet on Roma because they beat Atalanta 4-1, but then they can't win against any other team, it seems like. So, yeah, just to break down the match quickly, Verona opened the scoring. I thought Verona played well up to that goal. I thought they were doing good. They made life miserable for Roma. Barak, who, like me and Dan have talked about before, it was a nice goal to be aware and to get the rebound. The whole setup to the goal was beautiful. They had that free kick where, I think it was Paroni pretended to take it and he walked by and then, I think Karsdorp was there, Vigna lost him and then he got open about when the ball went wide and he crossed it in and then, it wasn't really a cross, more of a shot kind of cross, but Patricio had to make a save, so I guess it was a shot. And then, like I said, Barak got the rebound. A great goal by them. And then, Tamize, he made it 2-0. And at that point, I'm just laughing. Like, I'm talking to my dad. It's better to laugh than cry at this point. You know what I mean? Like, the team looked absolute garbage. I think, I honestly believe that was the worst first half performance I've seen from any other Serie A team this whole year. Except for, Empoli, I'd say. They had a much worse performance when they played us 4-0 down after the first half. They were terrible. But other than that, it's probably the worst first half performance I've ever seen this season. It was just embarrassing. Pellegrini, he gets a pass from me because he's been out for 2 months. I know it's not easy to, you know, find your form right away. So he gets a pass from me. But everyone else, like, come on, it's shocking, completely shocking. No effort. They seem lazy, throwing titles. Tammy tried to do what he could do, but, you know, it's hard when he's not getting service up there. But he tried his best. Oliveira, probably his first poor match since coming to Roma. Milan Niles just seems like he couldn't cross the ball this game. Vigna, who I think has been terrible all year, or maybe that's a little harsh, but I expect more from him at least. And then just Karsdorp, he's been terrible lately. I think everyone's been terrible, basically. That's what I'm going to say. Everyone's been bad. And second half, to be honest, I still didn't think the game was done because Verona started sitting back more and we had more of the ball. But once we made the two subs of Volpato and Bolvid, the whole game changed. For those of you who follow the Primavera closely, even if you're not Roma fans, just like in general, if you watch Primavera, you know who Volpato is. He's been lighting it up at the Primavera level. Bolvid, maybe you wouldn't know if you watch Primavera because he's with the main team more off the bench. But if you're a Roma fan, you know who he is and how good he can be. Even I think he captains Italy under 18, or used to at least. So yeah, Bolvid's been a pretty good player for, you know, Italian football. At the youth sector, he's been pretty good. And I think Bova is someone we're all excited about as Roma fans. But Pato is more of a surprise. You know, I know he's good. I know he's talented. But to come in and score like that right away was pretty impressive. And not only the goal, he changed the whole game. I feel like he dictated the pace of the game a lot more. He made quicker decisions, got the ball out wide when he had to. And I thought he played a really good game. And he is signed by Totti. He's a client of Totti, so... I think Volpato has a really bright future. If you guys don't know his story, he came from Australia, moved to Rome, I think last year or maybe this past summer, I could be wrong, but recently. And yeah, he's been playing for the Primavera team and he's been incredible 10 down there. And yeah, I think he has a really bright future. So yeah, big ups to Volpato, made a big difference. Bove, even though he looks like De Rossi, he does play a little bit like a younger De Rossi a little bit. That goal, I'm not sure if you saw that, but it was just incredible. He faked the cross initially, and then he saw a little slither room to the bottom right corner and caught the goalie completely off guard. And, yeah, finished it with a great goal. So credit to the young players. And you know what, me and Dan always talk about, sometimes experience means nothing in a game when you're not hungry. These youth players want to make an impact. Give them a chance. Like, you saw Mbappe for PSG or for Monaco, at least when he first came. You throw him in, and look what happened. Look at him now. These young players have more to prove. Yeah, play the kids. They want to earn a contract. They want to get minutes. They're hungry. Like, Veretout. I love Veretout. I think he's a good player. Just because he's not playing good for Mourinho doesn't mean he's a bad player. He played good for Fonseca. It's the way we're playing right now. It doesn't suit Veretout. I think he'd be good on a different team. I think he's still a very good player. But, for example, Veretout, he's too comfortable. He knows who's going to come in for him. Like, no one. We don't have anyone off the bench that's really going to replace Veretout. So he doesn't have to play hard because he knows, I can play as bad as I want. I'm not going to accept that. Like, who's going to come in for me? Well, now, you know, you got Bove to worry about because Bove, someone that fights for the team, he tied it up. And I like how instead of celebrating, like, you know, it's your first goal, you want to celebrate with the fans. Instead of doing that, he ran to half and wanted to get another goal. And that just shows the mentality difference and the hunger that the youth have compared to so many spoiled first-team players. So pretty embarrassing. And then just like the title of the podcast is Mourinho's Outburst. For those of you who, you know, follow Calciopoli and Moji and all those, the documentary of Juve and all that, basically, Pareto's brother, Alberto, has been working for Juventus over, like, the last 8 years. And he was, like, the head of events. And their father, Pierluigi, was a former Serie A referee. And he got convicted of Calciopoli, the whole scandal. And Mourinho did, like, the telephone sign, which when it first happened, I didn't understand what he was doing. But my dad explained it to me. I didn't, like, think of it at the time. And he said to them, I'll translate to English, he said, they chose you on purpose. Juventus sent you. And he said to the referee, and he got kicked out of the match. And he drop-kicked the ball, which was hilarious because if you're watching the game, they didn't actually show it on TV right away. Like, all you saw was him getting kicked out. And I'm like, what did he do? Like, what happened? And then I saw the replay, obviously, and he kicked out of the stadium. I think the rumor has it the ball's still traveling in the air right now. We'll see when it lands. But, yeah, it's probably going to be suspended for 2 to 3 matches, rightfully so. Like, you can't really do that. But that's why Mourinho coming to the city is good, though. You get headlines like that, and it's always entertaining when he's there. So, yeah, that whole Mourinho outburst happened. And Roma going forward, what we have to do, in my opinion, is clean out the whole team. Don't give a contract renewal to Mancini, even though I don't mind Mancini, but I wouldn't renew him. Cristante, don't renew him. Don't renew any of these players. Let them walk if they're not happy. Because in the past, we renew our players and we get locked into a contract. They don't want to leave, and then it's hard to make other signings because your salary, like, you have no budget anymore, really. It's all clogged up with players who are washed or too comfortable in the capital and just want to relax and, you know, tan in the sun in Rome. So, yeah, I think Roma are in for a complete rebuild in the summer. I think the Friedkins have made that clear with the recent news that, you know, a lot of players are unhappy with their contract renewal stalling, and, you know, they should stall. People were saying Mourinho is the problem, or just, in my opinion, there's idiots at this point. Mourinho has won everything there is to win. Only club he hasn't won with is Tottenham. Let's be honest, Dan, who wins with Tottenham?
Conte might not even win with them.
Yeah. Who knows? If Conte's of Tottenham and he's the new GOAT manager, is like Tottenham, literally like Roma, to be honest. The English version of Roma just can't win a trophy. I think the last trophy we both won is 13 years ago, almost 14. So, I think keep Mourinho, stand by him, because I think we've had 18 managers since we last won our Scudetto, which is almost a new manager every year. So, yes, stick with a coach, let it play out. And we all knew Mourinho wasn't going to win the Scudetto this year, let's be honest. And stick by him in the summer, see what he can do. He can bring in these good players like Tammy Abraham, for example. We would have never got him if he wasn't here. And just go from there. But, yeah, I think Roma's in for a complete rebuild. Anything to add, Dan, or should we just move on?
No, it was good. Like what you said, I'm a big believer of just developing these kids, play them. Even in the past, too, like Esposito said, like, these big teams, like, these teams don't give players a chance. Like, they always go on loan to, like, these other countries, Serie B, Serie C. You're not really going to develop your game like that when you're playing competition who are not as good as you or maybe the same amount of skill. You need to go to, like, a league, like, get developed into Serie A. And it's good what Roma did. They brought in the kids. They're hungry to prove to Mourinho that they should be in their squad. And both kids got the goals. So I wish Napoli would do more of that. I know we have, like, a lot of depth. And I just think if Napoli start playing the Primavera against like these teams such as like Salernitana, Venezia, when we're up like 2-3 nothing, then it gives them good experience and just to move forward and develop. But overall, the kids saved Roma from, I would say it would be an embarrassing defeat, but they ended up getting a point out of it. And I feel like Roma should take that point and use it to, and take the next steps for these coming matches.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think Lopato might be a little tougher to start him. He's like only 18 years old.
Yeah.
But I think Bove, he could start against Spezia. I wouldn't be shocked. I think Bove is going to be, he does kind of remind me of Fratesi a little bit. I think Bove is going to be a very good player when, you know, he kind of reminds me about it a little bit too. But no, I think he'll definitely be a good player, Bove. He has all the intangibles that you need to become a good player. He's a serious player. He's very mature for his age. And yeah, I have a lot of confidence that he'll become someone important for Italy. All right, so moving on to Salernitana and Milan, a game where, you know, Dan, I think it's fair to say we expected a straightforward win from Milan. Nothing straightforward like we've been saying all podcasts, but a team like Salernitana, I believe they're bottom of the table, right at the bottom. And, you know, Milan, who's at the top of the table, obviously, in time of game in hand. You expected Milan to really take advantage of this game. And, you know, especially later in the year where you're making a Scudetto push, you really want to win a game like this. And they didn't. They struggled, let's be honest here. To start off, incredible ball from Teo to Messias, who's been having a really good year. Last year, I raved about him when he was on Crotone. I really liked him. I thought he was probably the best player for Crotone, or one of the best, alongside Sydney. But, yeah, no, great run from him, great ball, but Salernitana's defense, they opened up at the Red Sea. Like, I don't know what they were thinking, maybe some miscommunication or something, but yeah, they opened up at the Red Sea there. And then Salernitana's first goal, I don't know what Maignan was thinking, to be honest. Maybe he thought when the ball's crossed in, it would be a little bit closer to him, but it was at the top of the box, you know, kind of like that area. And he ran out to punch it, but he ran out way too far. I don't know why he'd go for that. And he didn't win the header. The ball kind of fumbled, and then ultimately Bonazzoli found the back of the net to tie it up. And yeah, it's a big error from Maignan. But even later in the game, he messed up again. He held onto the ball for far too long. And he does remind me of Alisson Becker a little bit, how they like to play with the ball at their feet a little bit more and they feel comfortable. But, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. Sometimes, you know, you can get an assist every once in a while. Or sometimes you can have an embarrassing error. So it's kind of a give or take. But yeah, in this situation, it was not too intelligent to lose the ball there. But I slowly stripped him, got the ball, and then attempted a Rabona, which would have been a hilarious goal because he took the ball off Mike. But then an incredible goal because of Rabona. But then Romagnoli managed to clear it. That could have been very embarrassing for Maignan. There are two errors. But luckily, Romagnoli saved the day for Milan. And then Salernitana took the lead off a beautiful cross from Mazzocchi to Duric to make it 2-1. Great header from Duric. I saw Dan, you tweeted about it as well. And, yeah, no, great, great goal from Salernitana. I think if you're a Salernitana fan, then, you should be happy, obviously, with, that result. But, yeah, ultimately, I think, I don't know, for Milan, it's a game they had to win. But, yeah, no. I'm just trying to think right now who really disappointed me in that game. Let me just get the second goal first before I go any further. The second goal for Milan Rebic, he came in the second half. A player who is hot and cold. When he's on, he's off. He's off, he's off. And he came in and scored an absolutely brilliant goal from pretty far out. He hit it and went straight into the bottom left corner. And, yeah, great strike. I don't think Sepe, he probably could have done better, but I don't think he expected it. So, yeah, great goal for Milan to tie it up. But, yeah, like I was saying, the guys really disappointed me today were Maignan. I think Dan, you probably agree with that.
Yeah.
He was underwhelmed. And also, I really thought that Leao had a poor game. He's been good all year. But today, it just felt like he held on to the ball a little bit too much. For those of you who watch Canada, like I always tell Dan, kind of like Tejan Buchanan, sometimes he holds on to the ball a little bit too long. And I feel like Leao was doing that today. I feel like if he got the ball at his feet a little faster, then maybe it could have been a different game at times. You know, some decision making wasn't the best, but that's just nitpicking at this point. I thought he's been having a great year, but yeah, this game is a little bit underwhelming. But yeah, Dan, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, no, I know, like, Milan, they dropped points. This was a game they should have won. But I'm going to give Salernitana a lot of credit. Davide Nicola comes in, and they've been playing not the worst. They've been playing pretty well as of late. And it's a big tie, especially against a team like Milan. And it's a tough place to play in Salernitana. I know that like in Napoli, when Napoli played them, they played us tough. We barely got a win. It was a 1-0 win. It was a tough game. And they played Milan tough this game, too. They didn't give up. They were going forward. They looked really good at times. A beautiful goal on the second one with Dudric getting the header and then Bonazzoli opening up the scoring. He's been good for Salernitana this year. And I feel like he's always a decent player, just against big teams especially. He always seems to show up against these guys. If he had maybe more consistency, he could have been maybe playing for a bigger team. But he played really well. Gotta give Salernitana a lot of credit. They played tough. They didn't roll over. They've been playing very good. Not very good, but they've been playing a lot better as of late. And I feel like the appointment of Davide Nicola as the coach could be a good one for them. And who knows, maybe this result can spark like a little fire under them and maybe they can stay in Serie A.
Yeah, maybe. Like, they didn't play bad, like, at all. Like, you know, when you're playing Milan, you expect to sit back and you know, suffer a lot. But they had chances to win the game. So, yeah, credit to Salernitana. They played well. And, yeah, like I said, Serie A this year has been very fun. A lot of upsets, and especially this weekend. So, yeah, moving on now. Atalanta, Fiorentina. It was a very, I'd say a highly anticipated game. You know, maybe if you're a casual, maybe not, but if you really enjoy the Serie A and watch every weekend, I think it's a game, or you like the matchup between Italiano and Gasperini. It's one I was looking forward to personally, but I really thought Italiano completely outmanaged Gasperini today. I thought, I don't want to say masterclass, but it was close to one. Don't get me wrong, though. Atalanta did have chances. I think Cooper's he had a 1-on-1 with Dragoski, but Drago made an incredible save. It could have been 1-0 there for Atalanta. So it's not like I'm saying Atalanta got dominated by any means, but I thought tactically, Italiano completely just outmastered Gasperini, which has been a case lately. Yeah, he's been struggling. Musso made a pair of nice saves, but yeah, it was a really entertaining game. Drago just played well. Musso played well. I feel like Italiano's ideas are simple, but they work. Like, when I watch him, to me, it's pretty clear what he likes to do. He likes to sit back, and then when they get the ball, he likes to play it out wide, and then get up using the flanks and whip it into Piontek, or before Vlahovic, who was there. And now I think Piontek has 4 goals in 3 games, I believe. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how it's looking right now. And yeah, like I said, Italiano's ideas are very simple, but they're easy to understand. Everyone's on the same page. It's not too confusing for the players. And Piontek settled in pretty quick because it was simple. He wants to play, but I get the job done. When it comes to Atalanta, they just aren't the same without Zapata and Papu. I still think they're struggling ever since Papu Gomez left. Papu offered like a level of creativity, and they've been missing that since then. Don't get me wrong, Malinowski's an incredible player. Like, he's really good, and he's different than Papu, though. I feel like Papu was more, he liked to attack the heart of the defense and get by guys and make room for other players. Malinowski, I feel like he is a shoot-first kind of player. You know, he'll look to get his own shot off before creating for someone else, which isn't a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all. But I think what this Atalanta team needs is someone who's more creative and a pass-first kind of player, and they don't really have that right now. And, you know, missing Zapata isn't going to help you. But I also feel bad for Atalanta because they kind of did get screwed out of this game a little bit at one point. I believe it was Malinowski's goal. Yeah, it was Malinowski's goal. It got ruled off because they said Hatabuer was offside, even though the ball did not go through him. He was making the same run as Malinowski, but he was, I guess, involved in the play, which I don't think he was at all. The ball didn't touch him. He had nothing to do with, you know, the goal. So Atalanta did get screwed there. It was a nice goal, good run from Malinowski, and he wasn't offside, it was Hatabuer. So, yeah, that was unfortunate for Atalanta. And like me and Dan have been saying, the referees have been terrible all year, and I really do feel for Atalanta, because if that was, you know, Napoli or Roma or even Juve for Francia, we'd all be extremely pissed off. on this podcast right now. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that because for your Atalanta fans out there, I feel bad. I was baffled when I saw the call, and yeah, that was very unfortunate. But Ben, what did you think about this game when you watched?
Yeah, no, it was a very good result for Atalanta, and I'm sorry, Fiorentina, I should say. Again, Atalanta, they did get screwed over with that play. For me, I didn't agree with the call, and it seems like every week we have something to talk about with these referee decisions. But it wasn't the main point of this match. I give Fiorentina a lot of credit. They played well. Italiano, this guy's becoming one of the best coaches in all of Italy, actually. Like, I feel like he will make a move to a big team soon. And I feel like it'll probably be in the next year or so, depending if he can continue this. And it's good, too, that Piątek is scoring. They need someone to fill the shoes of Vlahović, and it seems like Piątek might be that guy. I believe, Andrew, you were right on the stat. He does have four goals in three games or something like that. Like, he's been very good for Fiorentina since returning to Italy. And I feel like if he can continue to score, then Fiorentina is a team that you can't take lightly. And you have to watch out for them because they can make that push for a European spot. And Atalanta's sake, it seems like now that who knows if top four might be not, it might not even be guaranteed for them. They got to start picking up results or else a team like Juventus capitalize and up into the top four and Atalanta could fall to Europa League. Heck, if they continue to play like this, who knows if they might even fall maybe the Conference League. Like, so they have to pick up, and find their form again, or else it's going to be a long stretch from now to the end of the season.
No, yeah, definitely, Dan. And by the way, you know, Fiorentina's 5 points off the top four and they have a game in hand.
Yeah.
So they could be 2 points off of Juventus. So, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm just saying that's very impressive for me, Italiano. And the way teams are dropping points right now, we could see Fiorentina in the Champions League. That would be incredible story. But, yeah, I just want to put that out there into the universe. Let's see if Fiorentina can somehow find their way in a Champions League spot, which would be pretty cool to see. But another team who I think is doing really well and under the radar, Sassuolo-Inter. What a crazy game for those of you who got the chance to see that. If you haven't, I recommend you try and find it somehow and go back and watch it. What a game that was. I feel like it's unfair to me to say they're under the radar. Like I said, if you're a usual viewer and you just watch it every week, Serie A, you know how good Sassuolo is. In my opinion, it could be a hot take. I think they play the best football in the Serie A. I really enjoy watching them. They played Roma the previous week, and you know, I try not to be amazed because obviously I want Roma to win, but it's hard not to be impressed by how they play. There's so many solid players and really talented players. And they're clearly the better team. Inter did have chances, though. They had plenty of chances. Concili turned into prime Buffon. I don't know what the hell I was witnessing. I couldn't believe my eyes. This guy was making saves left, right, and center. And even at the end, when De Vrij scored the header at the end, they called it off to the handball from DiMaggio. But it just felt like it was one of those games where you feel like Inter could have played for 10 hours and still would have scored a goal. It's one of those games where the ball just was going in the net. Concili was on one. This guy was not messing around, and incredible performance from Concili, who's always been a solid keeper, but every once in a while he does have those games where he's very annoying to play against if you're, you know, a top side and you're trying to get 3 points from a smaller side, and Concili's in the way in the roadblock for you. But yeah, huge game. I really want to talk about Raspadori. This kid's football IQ is incredible. He's such an intelligent player. I would love to see him in kind of like a false nine role for, you know, maybe a bigger club. He's so smart. I mean, Dan talked about before the podcast, just reminding me a little bit of Mertens, the way he plays. I think he's got to believe Sassuolo. Like, I don't want to pull a bit out of the way. You know, I do like Sassuolo. They're a great team, but Raspadori, I don't want to stay there too long. I think he's ready for a big move. I know he was an Inter fan as a kid. Maybe if they sell off Lautaro, which I would do, because I don't think he's a bad player, but I think he is not as good as people say he is. I also don't want to call him overrated. I think it's harsh, but if you're going to sell Lautaro, I think Raspadori's it could be a better version. I think he's more versatile than Lautaro. And I think it'd be a perfect replacement. Get the kid who's an Inter fan and upcoming Italian talent. Even Napoli, like I said a couple of podcasts ago, I think, you know, even though it's a different position, With Insigne leaving, I feel like Raspadori could be that next, up-and-coming Italian on the team that carry on the legacy. I think he'd be a great fit. I think he'd be great for any team. He's so smart, and, yeah, Scamacca, another great player who's been able for Sassuolo. I think he has, like, 10 or 11 goals in, like, 13 starts or something, or 14 starts, something like that. But, yeah, Scamacca, we know how good he is. It's not a shock. He scored as well. They have a great young core there. Berardi, he's been incredible for like a decade now. Obviously, the national team is a different story, but when it comes to Sassuolo, this guy's Mr. Consistent. You know, didn't really have too many poor games with them. And I believe, what's he have then? 10 goals, 10 assists? Like,
I believe
like that.
So, yeah. Maybe, I think he just set a record for like most like double-doubles or something, or like he's got the most goal contributions in 23 games through all of Italy, I believe. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. He's been Mr. Consistent, and that's really a shock, to be honest, when it comes to Sassuolo. I think he can help a team, maybe like Napoli or even Milan, that team looking to make a Scudetto push next year. I think he'd be a great fit. But yeah, credit to Sassuolo. They play beautiful football. And I actually wrote a tweet about this a couple of days ago. And I really like the organization Sassuolo really have with just finding a new coach. They seem to keep the same style no matter whoever they have as a coach, the De Francesco or the Zerbi or Dionisi now, they all have a similar play style. And it's a culture that they built now, I feel like, with Sassuolo. And they're always going to be a solid team, I think, in the mid-table to maybe fighting for Europa League spot in your future. If they can keep their players, which I think is incredibly difficult, especially in Italy when you're a smaller team, you're not, like, for example, the Premier League, they're lower-level clubs. They're still rich. Like, they're richer than most of Italy's top clubs. So they don't have to sell, the top players. But Sassuolo, they're going to have to sell at least one of Raspadori, Scamacca, or Berardi. Probably going to be either Raspadori or Scamacca, or both. Who knows? But, credit to Sassuolo. Great story. All started from that Di Francesco year with the Europa League push. And, really enjoy watching them. Dan, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, no, it was a very impressive display from Sassuolo picking up the 3 points. Give huge credit to Consigli. This guy was prime Dino Zoff, prime Buffon, all in one. Like any top goalie of all time, that was Consigli this game. And Inter did have like a lot of chances, and they just couldn't score. Raspadori, I've been saying it for a while now, even last year, a few podcasts and even on my Twitter. I'm very impressed with this kid, and he kind of reminds me of Mertens. I'm not saying that they're comparing them. I'm just saying like the style of his play. He can play as a cam, he can play as a striker, he can play as a left wing, right wing. He can do it all. He's such a good creative player. He's got a good creative mind. Kind of a similar frame as well. So I can see him making a move, and I would be on board with him coming to Napoli, especially even Berardi too. This guy's Mr. Consistent. You could say he gets 10 goals, 10 assists every year. The hard soul of Sassuolo, and I can see him being an ideal replacement for Insigne. And also, too, Scamacca is just a beast. This guy's so good. And I know you rave about him all the time. And I can see why. This guy's incredible. He's a monster, and I believe he will be the starting striker for the Azzurri in the years to come. This guy can do it all. He's got long shots. He's got height. He's got strength. He's got good shooting ability. And also, too, with Fratesi, I've been impressed with him as well. They just have good cores of players. They have every year, it seems like the coach doesn't matter, like you said, Enzo, it doesn't matter the coach. They always find a way to play the same style and play beautiful football. And they're very impressive to watch. And they're a team that, before in the past, you go, oh, Sassuolo, we can take them easily. Now you have to show up against them. And they're a tough team, especially when you play a European football. Like if you have to come from like against like a team like Liverpool or something. And then also you get to see you play Sassuolo on the weekend. They're a tough game to play. And they're a tough team to play. And I feel like if they can keep their core, maybe upgrade here and there with some young talent that they bring in, I can see them making European football maybe in the next year or so.
Yeah, well said then. I'm excited to see what Sassuolo can do. And if they do sell one of their talents, people are high on, like Raspadori or Scamacca. I have no doubts that they'll find a way to replace them and continue playing their beautiful football. So, yeah,
even,
credit to them.
We forgot, too, Traore.
Traore, how can I forget? He's a stud.
He's a stud, too. It just slipped my mind with, like, talking about these big, the Italian.
So many. Even Lopez.
Traore is good. Lopez, he seems like he can be a good footballer, too. I know at Marseille, he wasn't really the best, and they weren't really he's always had the talent. He's always got the hype around him. He never lived up to that, but it seems like at Sassuolo, he's finding his feet.
Yeah, and even, I don't want to say his name, so, but the Greek left back, I don't want to say his name because I'm going to completely butcher it, but
yeah,
he was incredible. I think he's one of the best players on the pitch against Inter, and I'm not sure how old he is. I don't know too much about him, but whenever I see him play, he's done really well. So, and they have a very solid team. They don't have many weak links defensively. Mulder has been good as well, but Kiedekesh and like guys like that, you know. But it's Sassuolo at the end of the day. They're not going to sign Virgil van Dijk for their back line. But for what they have, yeah, they've been incredible, and I really enjoy watching them. So hopefully they can keep their players and build from it, but it'll be tough. Moving on then, Napoli-Cagliari. I know it was a big opportunity. I thought Napoli would get the win, but playing in Sardinia is always difficult. I think Cagliari probably have one of the hardest away games for a big team to play. They're always tough. Their fans, sometimes they say things out of pocket. Their fan base, I'm sure everyone knows what I'm referring to. But, yeah, I think it was a good opportunity for Napoli. You know, you kind of get to see all the teams play out, the results that come in, see, if we win this game, then we can make ground on this team and that team. And they had a big chance to really capitalize on the Scudetto push. I was looking at Napoli's schedule then. You guys have a very tough schedule.
Yeah.
For remainder of the season. Let me just pull it up real quick. I took a look after the game, and you guys have Lazio, Milan, Verona, who we know can be tough. Udinese, who's given some problems to big teams. Atalanta, Fiorentina, Roma, probably going to be a free win. Empoli's going to, you're going to kill them. I think they're horrendous. And then Sassuolo. So four or five really tough games there at the end of the year. So I thought Napoli really want to take advantage of this one. Unfortunately, couldn't, but Osimhen saved the day. Could have been a lot worse. But yeah, take it away, Dan. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, so heading into the matchup, the lineups came up, and we had a few injuries, so we had to adjust to the lineups. It was like a 3-5-2 at time, 3-4-2-1. So I was like, you know, it's a good lineup. It's a strong team. We could probably pick up the 3 points. Then the match starts. I know Cagliari is very tough to play at home, and they prove we were getting dominated for like the first 20 minutes or so. And we really didn't find, even the whole match, throughout the whole match, we really didn't find our feet until when Osimhen came in. And when Osimhen came in, and Fabian, but the goal Cagliari scored, it's a goal that Ospina 9 out of 10 times will save it. But I'm not gonna say, if it wasn't for Ospina, we would have won, blah blah blah, because throughout the whole game, Ospina made 3 or 4 good saves that kept us in, and he's the reason why Cagliari didn't win 3-4-0. We were terrible. There was not one player, mainly besides Koulibaly, who I can say played well. The defense at times, they looked out of sort, and it's kind of hard too. We're playing a new formation. We're not really used to this formation that we're playing. And also too, it's just, once again, Osimhen, this guy's a god. Like, the guy comes in and he scores off of a beautiful cross by Ruri, which is, oddly enough, I'm going to praise him for once. It was a beautiful ball. He did make some boneheaded decisions in the first 20, 25 minutes, but then once he settled in, he was probably one of our best players on the pitch the whole game. And just Petagna, to the guy's a backup. The guy should just stay on the bench, play Osimhen every game, and then if you need to, once the season ends, try upgrading the backup striker, because we need a second striker. We can't rely on Petagna to win those games anymore. This guy, he's useless at times. I know we don't play to his strengths, where you have to cross it in, let him play in the box. He's a big box presence. He's tall. And we're trying to play him as like he's a center forward, but he's just keep him in the box, cross the balls in, let him try win handlers, but he was useless this game. Mertens was disappointing. I wasn't very impressed with the way he played, as well as Zielinski played okay. But I'm going to go on to this point. It's once again that I'm disappointed in Napoli, especially the way that we played when we have to when the chips are down. It seems like anytime we have the opportunity to get into first place or get into a good position to overtake the legs of Milan and Inter, we find ways to drop points. I understand the Inter game. It's Inter, should be, it's a tough team, but just the way we've been playing the last, even I'm going to go even further to the way we've been playing against Venezia. I haven't been really impressed with the way we've played. I know we got the 3 points, which I should be happy about, but then we see it against Barca, we see it against Inter, we see it against Cagliari. We haven't been playing well, and something needs to change. We need to just settle down. We, like Spalletti, needs to just talk to the team and just get them going. And also, too, I'm going to put a little blame on him, too. You see the team's playing bad. Why are you waiting till the 75th minute to make changes? Make the changes earlier. It seems like we wait too late, and then the subs that we bring in, they don't have enough time to make an impact. Osimhen comes in, gets the goal. This guy, gotta bring these guys in earlier. Let them play from the 60th minute, the 55th minute. Just, if you know your team's getting dominated, try to do something to change it and make sure that we end up dominating. Because once those guys like Fabian and Osimhen came in, we were in control. We started playing a lot better. We started creating chances. Coutinho made a few saves in the whole match that he made a few good saves that kept Cagliari in. But most of the time we were worried about, oh, is Cagliari going to score? If it wasn't for Ospina, I truly believe we end up losing this game. So something needs to change. We're lucky that we didn't lose this match, or else this round would have been an hour and a half. But you're lucky these teams also dropped points. But this was also a good opportunity for us to get into first place or even be tied for first place, especially now that Inter have a game in hand. So anytime you need to pick up the 3 points, you should. I know it's a tough place to play, but if Napoli want to be Scudetto winners, they had to find a way to win this game, and they didn't. So who knows now what's going to happen, because we got a tough game on Thursday, tomorrow, actually, against Barca. Then we play Lazio, who are they're never easy. They can show up or they can roll over. So that's going to be a tough game. And then we get Milan coming up too. So these are big games coming up, and we need to improve on our performance, and we need to start winning matches again.
Yeah. No, I totally agree that it was good in a way where, you know, it's not always easy to beat Cagliari and Sardinia, and Osimhen saved the day there, but also it was a great opportunity to, you know, make some ground on, you know, Inter, for example, like you said, the game in hand. But, yeah, I think the Scudetto race is anyone's right now. I still favor Inter, like I said. I think they have the easiest schedule and obviously the game in hand. But anything could happen. But it's clearly a 3-horse race right now, and we'll see how that plays out. But Juve, who are not as good at the race, are in the Champions League. They took on Villarreal in the first leg. They seem to struggle in the round of 16, no matter who they're playing, Lyon, Porto, anyone. And, you know, it's kind of the same here. Villarreal is not an easy team. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, you should win 5-0 against Villarreal. But they are a team. If you want to win the Champions League, they're a team you should beat, and I think comfortably as well. I don't think you should maybe not be struggling isn't what I want to say, but it's a team you'd expect Juve to beat without having to, you know, kill themselves to get the dub. If you're going to try to win the Champions League, I don't see Juve winning the Champions League. They don't have the team or just the play style to do it. I don't think Allegri he used to be. I don't even think it's that. I just think football changed as Allegri left. It's more attacking now. It's very hard to sit back and not concede nowadays in football. When you allow a team so much time on the ball, they're usually going to find one, and that's what happened. They took an early lead with Vlahovic. Congrats to him. UCL debut. 32 seconds, I believe it was, where he notched his first goal in the Champions League. Never even played in Europa League before. This is his first European game, and a great goal from him. And right after that goal, they sat back. They just tried getting a 1-0 win. I don't know if Pellegrini thinks away goals is still a thing. But I don't think someone updated him on the new rules. This guy seemed like, oh, we got our away goal, and we just sit back now. And even if they score, who cares? 1-1, we still have the advantage. Maximiliano, it's not like that anymore. You got to try and score as many goals as you can, home or away now. So, disappointed by the approach from Allegri. I think he really halted Juve's just play overall during the game. And Villarreal, the second half especially, they really turned it up. I thought they played incredibly well. And now going back to Turin for the second leg, it's anyone's game. You do want to favor Juventus still. Obviously, I still think they are the favorites, but it's not going to be straightforward. I think Juventus fans would really appreciate it, maybe a 2-0 lead going back home, or even a 1-0 at least. That would have been a lot more comfortable. But now, if anyone's game, who knows what's going to happen? Anything can happen. For the Serie A's sake, I hope Juve can do it, because right now we are not looking good in Europe. I think Atalanta is the only team who has an advantage in the current tie right now. Obviously, Napoli is playing Barcelona, and they got a tie away from home, which is great. So, really, other than Napoli and Atalanta, no one else is really doing Italy proud. Lazio is losing to Porto at the moment in the tie after the first leg. We'll see on Thursday what happens. But I still think Juve will do it. Come on, Allegri needs to try and score goals. I think he thinks that if you get a clean sheet, you get an extra goal or something. I don't know what he's thinking.
Double points.
But, yeah, double points or something. But I don't want to get too into this game because it's still a second leg to play. Overall, I was very disappointed with Juve's approach more than their actual play. Because, to be honest, I feel like if Allegri came in with more of an offensive approach, I think they could have gotten 2 or 3 past Villarreal. Instead, they got that one goal. Allegri's eyes lit up and said, let's sit back, boys, park it in, and hopefully go back to turn of 1-0, which didn't happen. It kind of bit him in the ass there. And congrats to Villarreal for tying it up there. But hopefully Juve can get it done in the second leg. What do you think about it, Dan?
Yeah, no, it was good for Juve that they got an early goal. But I feel like that early goal kind of benefited more of Villarreal because of their play style. You saw once Juve got the goal early on. Villarreal started getting more possession. Parejo, I think this guy's underrated. He doesn't get talked much about being class, but this guy is very class. He knows how to drop into pockets of space. He knows where to collect. He knows how to pass it up, dictate the play. If you notice, all the attack ran by him at least once. He touched the ball at least once every time that Villarreal had possession. He's their engine, he's their conductor. And for me, he was Villarreal's best player. And if you let him and the striker, I can't pronounce his name, Dajima, if you allow those two to dictate the game, they're going to hurt you. And that's what they did. Dajima, he made some nice runs, nice creating chances early on. And Lo Celso obviously missed that opportunity, which I think he should have done a little bit better, but maybe because he was on his left foot, it was harder. But once Juve got the goal and they sat back, it's like you said too, I think Allegri thinks that their away goal is still intact, or he just, I don't know, he thinks clean sheets are worth more. But once that happened, Villarreal got a lot of possession. They got well, and then they found a goal from poor defending from Juve. Rabiot didn't track Parejo, who made it was a good move by him, but it was a move that could have been easily avoided if Rabiot saw him run, and a good ball by Capu, I believe it was, to find Parejo, who buried it to make it 1-1. From that moment on, it was Juve didn't really create much besides Vlahovic creating the only two big chances where he scored one, and he made made a nice save. It's going to be tough now, especially because now Villarreal, I feel like they might enter this match. I do believe they might enter this match on a high horse, saying, okay, you know what, guys? We can beat this team. They're not the Juve that they once were. They're trying to get to that level, but I don't think they'll be there in the next year or so. Juve, they need a score early. They need a score, and they just gotta keep going. They can't just sit back and let Villarreal get possession and create a lot of opportunities, because they're the type of team that they will score. And especially if Gerard Moreno comes back for the second leg, it's going to be tough for Juve, because those two, with Dejami and Moreno, they're two good strikers and they're two good partners up top. They can cause a lot of havoc for the defense. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the second leg. But Juve, they need to step up and they got to not sit back and absorb the pressure. They got to keep going for it.
Yeah, no, they need to go for it then. That's the key word right there. They need to go for it. They have to. And if they sit back, I think Villarreal is going to take advantage and eventually get one. So hopefully for the, you know, for the benefit of Juventus and Serie A mostly, because we really need some kind of success in Europe. We have Napoli have a very tough game against Barcelona. Who knows how that's going to go?
It's going to be tough.
Porto, Lazio, I'd probably have to favor Porto. And Atalanta, Olympiacos, I love Atalanta. It's like, come on. Like, these guys, don't bet on them, because they're either going to shock you for good or for bad. So I'm just going to leave it at that when it comes to Atalanta. And Roma in the Conference League, the way we're playing, we're not going to win the Serie B. So, but yeah, it's not looking good for Italy and Europe, but hopefully someone can have some kind of success, because I think the league really needs it, because we're looked at as a joke at the moment. And rightfully so. We play terribly in Europe. We get embarrassed quite a bit. So we don't really deserve to have that respect right now, at least. So, yeah, that wraps up the podcast. A lot of games went down, so it was kind of a longer episode than last week. Last week was more about, you know, Europa League and Champions League. But looking forward to the next podcast. We got midweek games next week, so it could be a later podcast. We may have to wait till all those games are played and then record one at the end of the week. We'll see, though. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow us on social media, it's at SixOddCulture on both Twitter and Instagram. Shout out to everyone supporting the reels of Keza and Vlahovic. It's almost at 200K now on Instagram, so we appreciate that. It's really blowing up for some reason. I'm not sure why, but I appreciate it. We didn't really expect that to happen. But yeah, thank you for all the support. We really appreciate it, and we'll be back next week. Ciao.
Ciao, guys.